Barely a week goes by without some new aspect of climate change in our news. Hurricanes like Superstorm Sandy are expected to become more frequent on the East Coast. But what's the future of our climate here in the Midwest? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour, environmental engineer Jerry Schnur will tell us what Iowa's climate may be like in the near future. Also, State Senator Rob Hoeg will join us. He's a vocal supporter of climate change legislation in the Iowa State Senate. And atmospheric scientist Gene Talkley on what's changing, what kind of changes we need to adapt to because of climate change. An update on climate change after this news. Barely a day goes by without some new aspect of climate change in our news. Hurricanes like Superstorm Sandy are expected to become more frequent on the East Coast. But what's the future of our climate here in the Midwest? That's our focus this hour. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later this hour, State Senator Rob Hoeg will join us. He's a vocal supporter of climate change legislation. And atmospheric scientist Gene Talkley. He'll tell us what's changing, what kind of variations we need to adapt to because of the coming climate change. But first, let's get an idea of what's in store for us in terms of the climate by talking to environmental engineer Jerry Schnur. He's joining us by phone. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Ben.
Jerry, you are a professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Iowa, also the Alan S. Henry Chair in Engineering. You specialize in mathematical modeling on soil and water. So before we have you look into a mathematically modeled crystal ball, so to speak, I want to know the basis that you're using to look into the future. Tell us how this mathematical modeling works.
Well, Ben, the way that the models work is we take feedback from climate scientists who are running models of what the climate might look like in the future, and we feed them into models that generate precipitation and runoff and changes in water quality in the future. And those are based on just the we call it principles of continuity, the mass balance and energy balance and momentum balance, the basic principles of physics that govern these models.
Mm-hmm. So it has to do with precipitation coming out of our atmosphere, hitting our soil, in our soil. There's energy in this, and so you're tracking all this. How much? Give us an idea of how much data is involved that's being tracked in these models.
Well, if you count the monitored data like NEXTRAD radar and MODIS satellite data and so forth, it's literally millions and millions of bits of information that feed into the models.
Mm-hmm. And also the type of water, the quality of the water, to describe that, right?
That's correct. And we have sensors which can measure the quality of the water every 15 or 20 minutes and relay it back to the laboratory.
According to your research, what will our environment and climate in Iowa, in the Midwest, be like in, say, 2030, 2040, 2050?
In the near future, it would make sense to say that it's likely to be an extrapolation of what's occurred in the last couple of decades, and that is more frequent precipitation of high intensity, meaning the potential for more runoff of soil, greater runoff of nutrient and fertilizer from agricultural fields, and, of course, the possibility of flooding as well.
Mm-hmm. So when we have storms, they will tend to be more dramatic and a higher downfall of rain in a shorter time.
That's right. If you look at the record, the meteorological record, which goes back maybe 130 years or so in Iowa, you're hard-pressed to find a day more than 4 inches of rain in a single day. But now it occurs quite frequently. We have instruments in Dubuque, and last summer, 2011, in late July, there was 10 inches of rain in a 12-hour period, and literally a 7-foot wall of water washed down the north fork of the Catfish Creek where we're studying. So these intense precipitation events, and then over even a season or even a year continuing, that's what's new and troubling for the future.
Mm-hmm. I see, though, not only floods, extreme wetness, extreme downfalls of rain, but also extreme dry periods?
It may seem strange to our listeners, but we have to actually warn against both increasing floods and droughts. When you have a warmer skin of the planet and you enter a dry period, that it's very easy to heat dry air. So the drought, which we're actually currently still in and occurred in this past summer in Iowa, that's a threat for the future as well during dry periods that things will get really hotter. Iowa's sort of in the middle of the country, kind of on a cusp of a much more moister, humid eastern part of the country, which is receiving more precipitation. In fact, the whole planet, the global rainfall rate is increasing because there's more evaporation because the Earth is a bit warmer. Mm-hmm. But also in the western United States, because of the propensity for higher temperatures, it can even get drier. And we're sort of in the middle where we can have some of both extremes. And indeed, that's what's projected for the future.
I wonder if there's a region or a state currently in the United States that we can look to as more or less our future in terms of climate.
If you were to believe the models, let's say over the next 50 or 70 years, we would become more like Kansas or even the panhandle of Oklahoma, so drier and warmer.
Mm-hmm. How sure are we of these mathematical models? How good are they at predicting decades into the future?
As you know, the models start off as global models, general circulation models, they're called, and at different grid spacings, maybe 1 degree by 1 degree, they look at the entire planet. And then when you try to predict at the mesoscale, as it's called, or the regional scale, it becomes more uncertain, to be sure. But I should say that the United Nations, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is now tracking 24 of these models worldwide, run at many different institutions. They all agree that it's going to be a much warmer future. They disagree on the exact amount, and of course that does matter, the exact amount. So there's uncertainty around those projections. And when you move to the regional scale, like Iowa in the Midwest, it gets even more uncertain. So it is true that there's uncertainty around these projections. But on the other hand, all of the models agree that our gases, the greenhouse gases that humans emit, are warming the planet, and they all agree with the direction, if not the exact magnitude of that change.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Schnur, any thoughts on how we should think about adapting to what's coming to our area?
Well, one thing with regards to the flooding, and our statement points this out as well, the climate statement, that we have to become adaptive. That means we have to harden our infrastructure or make it such that it can withstand storms. So if you build a building in the floodplain, it's got to be able to be flooded and hosed down and refunctioning. If you have physical electronic capacitors and transformers in the floodplain near a well, say, that you're depending on for water supply, you got to raise all that stuff up well above the, let's say, 100 or even 500-year floodplain. Now, that's expensive, but it's something that we have to embark on now in order to adapt to the changing climate that's coming.
The statement that you're referring to is a statement that you and 137 other scientists around the state of Iowa signed a climate statement last month. The statement addressed the 2012 drought, saying that research shows that more extreme and destructive weather will occur in Iowa at a higher frequency in the coming years. Did I encapsulate the thrust of that statement? Anything to add there, Jerry?
No, that's right. And the statement says that it doesn't have to be a bad thing necessarily. We can prosper, create jobs, and provide an engine for economic growth, but we do have to change the nature, the structure of our economy and move towards more energy efficiency and conservation and renewable energy rather than fossil fuels. It's going to be a story that will be long told in human history, this transition from the fossil fuel age to something new and better. It will be painful. Change is always painful, but it can be an important job creator in the future.
Okay. Now, one thing that we've skipped up skipped over up to this point is the cause. Of course, we're seeing climate change. I think there's a great consensus that it is happening. But, of course, some debate on the political landscape, also in popular media, about whether it is our actions, humankind's actions, that are responsible. That debate exists in the political landscape, the popular media. What does the scientific community say?
Well, I would say to that type of a comment that the emissions that we are making, you know, burning millions of tons of fossil fuels, coal, oil, and natural gas, that took 300 million years to accumulate in the Earth's crust. This is a dramatic change in the biogeochemistry of the Earth and raises the concentration of these gases in the atmosphere. Those are radiatively important trace gases. That means they create a greenhouse effect, much like rolling up the windows of your car in the summertime, and the heat does not escape. So we are warming the Earth regardless whether natural warming is occurring as well. So I would say to those people that it should not give you it should give you pause. It should not give you any comfort, because whatever we're doing is adding to any natural changes that you think may be occurring, and that's certainly dangerous for the future.
If you just joined us, my guest is environmental engineer Jerry Schnur. He is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at the University of Iowa, specializing in mathematical modeling on the soil and water as we look at climate change this hour. And let's go back to that climate statement that we mentioned there, Jerry. Why do you think it was important for you and the 137 other scientists to sign it?
Well, I think it, first of all, if you look at the names, it represents 20-some colleges and universities throughout Iowa, and probably the preponderance of those who are teaching in the physical and chemical and biological sciences. So it's quite impressive for the breadth of the number of people who signed it. I won't say that everyone signed it who perhaps is in that category, but certainly most everyone signed it and did so willingly. And this is reflective of what I see when I go to meetings throughout the country of scientists, too. For example, the American Geophysical Union, 17,000 scientists from all over the world come to these meetings, and you're hard-pressed to find there's only a handful who don't think that this is a serious problem and that humans are at least partially contributing.
So why bring out this climate statement extra? It's not usual part of a physical scientist's job, is it? Is it a wake-up call sort of to the non-scientific community? You're not listening to us.
Well, we think it's a teachable moment. You know, we are in the midst still of a drought in the Midwest, and it covers a large fraction of the western United States and this country. We just experienced Hurricane Sandy, a superstorm which was unprecedented, the lowest pressure reading ever in the eastern United States of 940 millibars ever recorded. The largest extent that several Katrinas could have fit within Sandy, 943 miles of coastline affected. So it is indeed a teachable moment, and one in which it should give us pause, and we should think about whether our actions are causing these change in more extreme events and what we can do about it.
Jerry, you say this is an extrapolation of trends we've seen in these mathematical models. Will it be a gradual trend, or are there some years to come in which we'll see very dramatic changes?
Well, in the out years, in the decades, let's say 50, 60, 70 years from now, the models indicate that it should get quite a bit drier because the increase in temperature will increase evaporation. And so Iowa could change from the current problem that we're having of so much precipitation and flooding in recent years to one of increasing droughts. And that seems to occur, let's say, after 2020, and the statement actually mentions that as a threat to for our future.
Jerry, also joining us by phone, Mark Young is with us. He's an associate professor of chemistry at the University of Iowa. He specializes in analytical and physical chemistry. Mark Young, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. And you've been listening to our conversation, and we're having you on because you are also one of the scientists who signed this climate statement last month. Unlike Jerry, at least by appearances, your area of chemistry is less directly related to the climate, or is it?
Well, it's true. I'm not a climate scientist, but it's just as true that I am a scientist. It's not accurate to say my work is unrelated to climate change. As Jerry pointed out, there's a huge amount of data that goes into these models, and it covers a vast array of chemical and physical processes in air, water, and land. And you need people to provide this data, so you need scientists to focus on these detailed issues, and that's the thrust of my work on particulate matter in the atmosphere. And then you need climate scientists like Jerry to pull all of these details together and determine the links between them and make accurate predictions of climate change. So you need both.
Why did you, Mark Young, feel that it was important to speak out on climate change in the form of signing this statement?
Well, I think Jerry outlined the challenges that come from a changing climate, and I'm concerned. I like Oklahoma fine, but I live in Iowa. I would like to not see these kind of changes, and I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the near-term future and beyond, and I don't think we're doing nearly enough to prepare for climate change or taking sufficient action to reduce the impacts. And scientists, I don't think, are speaking out enough on this, or at least the ones that do aren't speaking loudly enough or often enough.
Mm-hmm. When asked to sign this, did you have any hesitation about it?
Not once I was asked, but I admit it was buried in my email inbox, and I sort of overlooked it. I think that's a natural inclination of many scientists, is to let others do the work and speak in front of the media. But mm-hmm. but once I was prompted, I read it, and I had no problems with it.
Jerry Schnoor, I get the feeling you were a leader in getting this climate change statement out there. When scientists in Iowa were reluctant to or needed some prodding to sign, or perhaps didn't want to sign, what were the reasons?
The reasons, I suppose, vary. From some people think that it is a problem, but they may not agree on exactly what to do about it. Other people think, as you alluded to, Ben, that it's just the climate is warming, but that it's probably due to natural causes. And so there are a few scientists, I can't even tell you the names because I didn't run into any personally, but there were three or four of us who were circulating the climate statement, and there were some people who chose not to sign.
I wonder, this is a question both to you, perhaps to Jerry first. Are you noticing, does this represent a sort of a cultural shift within your scientific field, within the world of science, because of what has happened with the treatment of climate science in popular media recently, that you have to be in a different position, ready to address the popular media, the popular press? Jerry?
Well, I think that's always the role of the scientist to the science should inform public decision making. They don't scientists don't make decisions, nor should they make decisions. That's up to our elected officials and government workers. But they should do science which is relevant and informs policy. Where maybe there's some difference of opinion among scientists is how far should you go in explaining the science to policymakers. Some would say, I just do my work, I publish it in a journal, and that's that. Mm-hmm. Some would say, no, I have a responsibility to communicate those findings in an intelligible way to the public. And I would say maybe Mark agrees there's some perhaps differences of opinion there among scientists.
Mark Young?
Sure. That's accurate to say that I think the vast majority of scientists accept the facts of climate change, and now the debate centers on how bad is it going to be and how rapidly will these changes come. And as a scientist, I am frustrated by what I see sometimes in the media, misperceptions, misinformation. No matter how heartwarming it is to me as a chemistry professor to see somebody remember some little tidbit of chemistry from their freshman year, that's no reason to deny all of climate change science. There's a lot of very smart people who've worked very hard on these problems, and I think it is of such import that it we should be speaking out more now.
As scientists and researchers, you both surely prize objectivity. Is there a danger here? Do you need to draw a line so that you do not endanger this by perhaps politicizing it unnecessarily?
Well, I think that's always the danger of speaking out. But again, in my own case, I try not to, unless asked directly, say what policy should be, but rather what are the implications of these changes that we're experiencing on the physical environment and even on the economy, though I'm not an economist. So I try to respond as I can, but again, I'm not in a position of actually making laws or making policy, and we have people who do that. We must speak to them so they have all the information they need, I believe.
Mark, did you have anything to add to that point?
It's a great point. I mean, scientific objectivity is prized, and to appear biased by making public statements is something that worries many scientists, I think. And yes, we are best at stating the scientific results, honestly relating the uncertainties, and hoping the policymakers will accept those findings and then make policy that benefits the most people.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because in our next half hour we'll be talking with State Senator Rob Hoge, a vocal supporter of climate change legislation in our Iowa legislature. What would you advise? What would you most want to know, lawmakers to know needs to be done in terms of laws so that we avoid as much climate change as possible here? Jerry.
Well, I think we need a renewable portfolio for energy in the future in Iowa. Years ago, we were a leader in this regard, and it's one reason, not the reason we have built out our wind power up to 20% of our total electricity demanded in Iowa, which is really quite admirable. But we were among the leaders in the 1980s in this regard, and I would like to see us become that again. Iowa's a great place for things to grow, turning biomass into biorefineries and creating products, both energy products and chemical. Specialty chemicals from plants is something we can do well. We're a great place for wind, and we could be a great place for solar as well. Mostly when the wind isn't blowing, the sun is shining, so the two go together very well in Iowa. And I'd like to see us have a portfolio, a goal for the state in building out more renewable energy resources.
Mark Young, your message?
There is a definite scientific consensus on climate change and that they should be planning for it. And I agree with Jerry. I think there are great opportunities here as well as challenges. And so I would like to see policies that that address the challenges and take advantage of the opportunities.
Okay, thank you very much. Mark Young, Associate Professor of Chemistry at the University of Iowa. Jerry Schnurm, Environmental Engineer, Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the UI, also the Alan S. Henry Chair in Engineering. Jerry and Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up in just a moment, as we continue to talk about climate change, an update for the state of Iowa, State Senator Rob Hoge will join us, a vocal supporter of climate change legislation. Also, atmospheric scientist Gene Tockley. He'll talk about what's changing, what kind of changes we need to adapt to because of climate change. When River to River continues, this is Iowa Public Radio. Hurricanes like Superstorm Sandy are expected to become more frequent on the East Coast. We've been hearing that in our news. What's the future, though, of our climate here in the Midwest? That's our focus this hour. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in just a moment, State Senator Rob Hoge will be with us, a supporter of climate change legislation in the state Senate. We'll find out what he has in mind. But first, we want to go to our Ames studio where Gene Tockley is with us. He's a professor of atmospheric science, director of climate science program at Iowa State University. And Tockley also recently spoke at a UN conference on climate change in Qatar. One of the key signatures was his on the climate change statement issued recently, signed by 138 Iowa scientists at colleges and universities. We talked about that in the first half hour. And welcome to our program, Gene Tockley.
Thank you for including me.
Last half hour, if you were listening, we spoke with the environmental engineer at the University of Iowa, Jerry Schnur, specializing in mathematical modeling, concentrating on soil and water. This half hour, we want your perspective to begin with, Gene Talkley, as an atmospheric scientist. We had this major drought this year, perhaps the most extreme in most of our lifetimes here, maybe in the last 50 or so years. Can we expect more droughts, other forms of extreme weather in the near future? Give us your forecast.
Yes, it's very likely that our changes in precipitation and temperature are going to be more extreme in the future. Over the last 30 years, we've seen more increases in precipitation, and we have had few occurrences of drought, but this past year was kind of a wake-up call that droughts also may be more frequent in the future.
In the first half hour, I asked our guest to tell us what we might be like here in Iowa in the future, and Oklahoma and Kansas were mentioned. Do you agree with that? That might be a likely scenario?
That's one of the projections, that we could be more dry and certainly more warm. It's very clear that our climate is warming. It has been for the last 40 years and will continue, it's very likely, into the future. The precipitation aspect, as Jerry pointed out, is more difficult for models to project, and certainly our recent past shows our precipitation and humidities have really increased, but as he also mentioned, we're on the kind of a gradient here, and so we could at the same time get weather that's more like Kansas or Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. A gradient, but yet he also mentioned, I wanted your view on this, the year 2020 would be significant in terms of what do you see on that signpost on our road to climate change?
If we look at the averages, we'll probably continue to see just gradual changes, but it isn't the averages that are so critical. It's the extremes, and the extreme events are much more difficult to predict. But when we have more heat in the system, as we certainly are, as our temperatures are going up, it just means that there's more energy available to create something that is at the margins and something in some cases we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm. So the skin, the heat on the skin of our planet is just heating up, accruing, getting more and more energy. That's how we should think about it. And then this extreme weather, be it flood or drought, is a release of that energy?
That's correct. And hurricanes, for instance, concentrate energy in a small area, as do thunderstorms and so on. So they can more concentrated forms of energy that then are released in a variety of weather events.
Iowa State University atmospheric scientist Gene Talkley is with us. If you have questions, concerns about climate change here in the Midwest, also, what do you think we and other Iowans should be doing to limit climate change or perhaps to adapt? Give us your perspective. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. How will this impact agriculture? How is it affecting changes in farming here in Iowa right now, Gene Talkley?
We're already seeing changes that are occurring in terms of earlier planting dates. We're planting our crops earlier. We're planting longer season hybrids. We're planting higher densities to take advantage, frankly, of the climate change that we've had in the past. And so this is an appropriate action that we ought to seize opportunities when they present themselves. And these are but then the additional precipitation in the spring is reducing the days suitable for field work. So farmers need to buy larger machinery so they can get more done in shorter windows between these more frequent rains.
You and 137 of your colleagues from Iowa's colleges and universities signed a statement about climate change in this past month. The statement said that while it can't be 100% proven that the changes in the weather are caused by human activity, there's absolutely no doubt that these changes are happening in our climate and in our environment. I wonder, why can't you say 100% certainty that these changes are caused by human activity? Gene Talkley.
The climate system is what we call a nonlinear system. It's a chaotic system that does some things that are really unpredictable, and so you can never be completely sure about what the future will be. Just like you can't be completely sure whether your house is going to burn down or whether you're going to be in an accident, automobile accident. So. There's some aspects of climate that we are much more certain about than others. And temperature, we have more confidence in the fact that temperatures will rise than we are in the fact or in the direction of that precipitation will go.
Atmospheric scientist Gene Talkley is with us of Iowa State University. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Joining our conversation also now in our Iowa City studio, State Senator Rob Hoge. He represents Southeast and Northeast Cedar Rapids, I believe, a supporter of climate change legislation in the Senate here in Iowa. Senator Hoge, welcome to our program.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Tell us, this year probably the worst drought Iowa has seen in our lifetimes, all of us speaking, most of us listening as well. I wonder how much discussion this stirred up among lawmakers in Des Moines. Do you have a big picture overview of how you and your colleagues see this change in our weather?
Well, Ben, here's my reaction. First of all, I really appreciate the work of the scientists to raise this issue. This is one of the things we count on them to do, especially our public university scientists really appreciate what they're doing. But I will tell you, I hear from more and more colleagues in the legislature that they're thinking that this is a serious issue now. You know, whereas maybe 5 or 10 years ago they didn't. For 30 years in this country, we've had a debate. First, is it real? And if it's real, do we just prevent it or do we try to adapt to it? And now that we've seen this series of climate-related disasters, floods in Iowa, but obviously not just Iowa, around the country, and most recently, of course, the drought of 2012 and Hurricane Sandy – you're seeing more and more people say, you know what, we got to take this seriously. And it means two things. One, not only do we reduce emissions, which is what most of the discussion has been about, now we also have to deal with these extreme events, regardless of their cause. And one of the ways I heard it characterized recently that was really helpful was baseball players have always hit home runs. But you put a baseball player on steroids, and that baseball player is going to hit more home runs. You can't say that any individual home run was caused by the steroids because they hit home runs before they were using steroids. And now we're in a system where our climate system is basically on steroids, and we've got to get ready for those sorts of events that are happening.
Easy for us to grasp. Is that correct, and a correct analogy for you, Gene Talkley?
That's a good way to put it. Just the probability of these extreme events is going to increase.
Okay. So while we say we have one really warm winter or one really cold winter, we're talking about the climate. We're not talking about any one year. That's an incredibly small data point in this very sophisticated, complicated system, Gene Talkley.
That's correct. And it just takes a number of years for those statistics to reveal themselves.
Tell us, Rob Hoge, Senator Hoge, what would you like to see happen in the legislature in terms of law changes?
Well, I think the number one thing I've got a long series of ideas. I've never been short of ideas. My colleagues know that. Lots of things we could do for renewable energy, transportation solutions, energy efficiency, natural resource management, flood protection, watershed management, water policy to deal with drought. Long series of things to do. One of the things, and this is still kind of big picture, but one of the things is people need to recognize this is central to what government does. Dealing with disasters like this, changes in weather, scientific research, this is something we need government to be involved in. And I think most legislators are starting to recognize that. And nationally, we mimic here what's going on nationally. Nationally, we came really close to doing something about climate change in a big way after Hurricane Katrina, after the loss of Arctic sea ice in 2007, and then this country continuing to be very, very patient, said, no, we're going to wait a little longer. I think after the drought of 2012 and Hurricane Sandy, and remember, it wasn't just Sandy. We also had Hurricane Isaac and Tropical Storm Debbie and flooding in Duluth, Minnesota with 12 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. These are unprecedented events. And I think people are saying, okay, now we got to get serious about this. And it's on both prongs of that agenda, both reducing our emissions and becoming more resilient in the face of these climatic extremes.
State Senator Rob Hogue is with us, along with Gene Talkley of Iowa State University, studies the atmosphere, researches it. Robert is in Decorah. He dialed 1-866-780-9100. Robert, what's on your mind as you listen to this conversation?
Yes, well, a lot of people, a lot more and more people are becoming interested in generating solar on their own homes, generating electricity through solar on their own homes. But 75% of homes are not suited due to siding and shading, problems like that. And so the alternative would be community solar projects. And what we need is for the state to adopt a group net metering or virtual net metering policy that would encourage the utilities to do group net metering and connect to those kinds of projects.
Robert,
I'd like that support from Senator Hogue.
Thank you. Robert in Decorah, in the area of solar, Senator Hogue, what would you support there?
First of all, I appreciate the call, and I do. I would support some sort of aggregate net metering for customers. Solar doesn't make sense necessarily on every rooftop because of the things that Robert talked about, but it is one of those technologies that actually works in Iowa. Up in Decorah, we now have the largest photovoltaic array in our state, solar power system, 280 kilowatts. And Ben, just 5 years ago, I had the largest photovoltaic array in my district, 7 kilowatts. So there's been a 40-fold increase in the size of solar projects. In September, I proposed something four times as large as that at the University of Iowa. And there are many ways you can do this. You can have a feed-in tariff, net metering, group net metering, a renewable energy standard that Professor Schnorr talked about, states' tax credits for renewable power. Here's the point. In Iowa, we are uniquely situated to move from a fossil fuel economy to a renewable energy future. And I'd like to see
because of our wind and our sun.
Wind, our sun, our biomass that Jerry talked about. We have great resources, and we can really lead the world and demonstrate that you can be not only dealing with the climate issue, but you can be improving health, and you can be improving sustainability, and improving your economy. We spend $13.8 million a year on energy – excuse me, $13.8 billion a year among Iowans as energy, over $4,000 per Iowan. And if we can redirect those resources to homegrown renewable energy that grows jobs and wealth in Iowa, doesn't pollute, can never be depleted, we're going to go a long way to do that. So what Iowans should be doing is they should be talking to legislators right now and saying, you know what, let's do more renewable energy. This stuff really works.
Tell me, Senator Hogue, what are the hurdles, the roadblocks you run into in the Iowa legislature? What do you see as your chief challenges there? Are there doubters, climate change doubters, deniers among you?
There are, and we've had some debates about that generally in points of personal privilege in the Iowa Senate, and we've talked about. So there are some people who are just – they really don't want to acknowledge this reality. And you know, but people's opinions also change as events happen. And, you know, you can't argue with the fact that we're losing Arctic ice cover. I'm not saying that's the problem that should motivate people, but that is clear, definitive evidence – that the Earth is warming. You don't lose half your Arctic ice cover without something going on. And so there are clear changes happening in our atmosphere, very warm things, warm years going on. And so this is a new reality, all these disasters, all these things happening. You know, we got to deal with it. And I think Iowans are getting there. I think more and more are starting to understand that. But the good news is on a lot of these solutions is you're not just doing them for climate reasons. you're also doing them because they'll create jobs and grow prosperity in the state. So two different people can look at something. The production tax credit, for an example, at the national level. Steve King doesn't believe in climate change, but he's a strong advocate for Iowa's wind energy industry. So you can set aside on some of these issues the debate about climate change and do the solutions because they work.
Mm-hmm. Gene Tonkley, if we do all these things that Senator Hoag is talking about in the area of solar, renewable energies, wind energy, just to be a doubter here, does it really make a difference? Hasn't the train, as far as carbon emissions really and the effect they have on our environment, really already left the station? And little old Iowa, what difference can we make?
Certainly, the emissions that have already led to the increases in carbon in the Earth's atmosphere are going to affect the climate for hundreds of years, regardless of what we do. But the real point is that we can't let this get further out of control. And at the run-up to the climate convention in Copenhagen, we discussed the need to restrict the rise in Earth's temperature to at maximum of 2 degrees Celsius without interfering, having serious interference with the climate system. So these long-term measures are critically important so that it gets the climate doesn't get beyond the range where we can adapt to it.
Okay, let's try to squeeze in a call or two at the end of this discussion. Nathan in Ames with us. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hey, I've recently read a lot of things floating around the internet, and I know that's not always the most credible source, but I've heard about Arctic methane or biomass trapped under the Arctic ice, and as it's degraded, it's created methane and a large amount of it. And I know methane is 70 times more harmful to the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. And I was wondering if either of your guests had heard anything about it or
okay.
if we're doing anything in response to it.
Nathan and Ames, thank you. Let's point that one at Gene Tonkley. What can you tell us?
Yes, that's certainly well known that there's a lot of vegetation under the Arctic tundra, and as it warms, this vegetation is the land is thawing. The methane is produced. It's emerging into the atmosphere. It's one of those what we call feedback processes that amplify the impact of climate change, because the more you warm those areas, the more methane's released, and the more methane's released, the more it warms because it's a heat-trapping gas. So it's one of those factors that is not well represented in our models and may mean that some of our models may even be too conservative.
Let me ask you, Senator Hoag, the climate change statement that Gene Tonkley, 137 other scientists signed, has that made a difference in the legislature and how you and your colleagues think about climate change for this coming session?
Well, there's no question it made a difference for me. And again, it's one of those – by itself, does it make a difference? No. But does it provide a clear statement that this is a serious concern that has to be addressed? Yes, it does. And for people out there who are looking for a scientific controversy about climate change, where are the 138 scientists in Iowa saying this is wrong? You don't hear from them, and that's because they're not there. I have talked – I think I've seen about three or four – you know, I try to read everything on this issue. I've read a lot of the so-called denier or skeptics literature on this, and they have theories as to why it will be less warming or less severe. But that's all they are, is these theories. And the mainstream scientific community has looked at this and said, it's real. It's happening. We have to deal with it. Here's something I like to
We're coming up on the end. Yep.
Yeah, something I like to share. This is a reality we have to deal with, not because we wanted to. It's just a challenge of our generation. Just like in my parents' generation, they had to deal with World War II. Nobody asked for World War II. And in fact, America did everything it could to avoid World War II, but it had to deal with it. Fortunately, today, the good news is the solutions to this problem are a lot better, and we don't have to sacrifice thousands of young Americans around the world. So we need to come together, do it. And one final point. it's at the same time as we're cutting emissions with solar and wind and energy efficiency and transportation solutions, we also need to deal with those climate changes that are now no longer unavoidable. And Professor Tockley and others have done a great job of telling us what those types of problems are in terms of flooding, drought, changes in ecological systems, invasions of new species. We got to deal with this.
State Senator Rob Hoke, thank you for joining us, coming into our Iowa City studio. One chapter we've had, small, in the continuing discussion that will go years and decades into the future. I want to thank you for coming in, Senator Hoke. And also, Gene Tonkley, thank you very much, Professor of Atmospheric Science, Director of the Climate Science Program at Iowa State University. Thank you for coming into our Ames studio.
Thank you for including me.
And coming up tomorrow, rather on Monday, we'll find out about the right-to-work state ripple effect, perhaps from Michigan to Iowa. We'll find out on Monday. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, and Ames help from Jason Burns. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.